This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Next time you pop open a beer, should give a toast to the settlers of Texas who brought the love and craft of beer making to the Lone Star Frontier. Texas has a history of beer making, beer drinking, and beer singing. Lots of cultural connections with beer and Texas music. Here's one.
So loud.
Leon, you look mighty swell, though, hanging your head in shame there, neighbor.
Well, look at that, fellas. Looks like we'll have to be leaving all your good friends and neighbors. So speaking for all the Pearl Wranglers and all the swell folks at the Pearl Brewing Company, brewers of premium quality Pearl beer, this is your old friend Adolph Hoffner saying goodbye. And thank you, good people, for listening.
And that was Adolph Hoffner, and he was well known as a swing musician, country swing here in San Antonio, and his Pearl Wranglers. He was a spokesperson for Pearl Beer, and you can find out about him and other beer institutions at the Institute of Texas Cultures. They're looking at beer history with the new exhibit that opens on Friday. But beer history isn't over. It's still being made with local craft brewers and the Texas legislature. We'll be talking about that as well. Do you have some fond memories of local beer ad campaigns? Are you brand loyal to a local beer brew? Why is that? And what do you want to see happening with the local craft brew scene? Call in. The number to call is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and send us a tweet at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Travis Poling. He's a beer journalist. What a job. Author of San Antonio Beer, Alamo City History by the Pint and Beer Across Texas. Sarah Gould is with us, curator of the Brewing Up Texas exhibit at the Institute of Texan Cultures. And Scott Metzger, he is the founder and CEO of Free Tail Brewing Company. It's great to have you back here, all of you. You guys are, you've been here before.
Thank you.
Now a different topic, but not for you, Travis. It's always about beer.
It's always beer.
Okay, so since Travis, what's going on here? How did this exhibit get started? How did you pop the top on that?
About 7 years ago, when Beer Across Texas first came out, there were only 36 breweries in the state. So it was, we had a lot of catching up to do. But it was there was a lot of home brewing going on then. There was a lot of interest in it, and so somebody.
What was holding it back?
Somebody at the time, the market just wasn't ready for it. I mean, people were still. This is still a Bud Light town, and less so all the time. But it was very much focused on lighter beers and for the Texas heat. But you know, the craft brewers have stepped up to fix that now, and there's a lot more of them. It's become part of our culture again in the way that it was. In the way that it was 150 years ago, and so they kind of wanted to celebrate that at the Institute. So about 7 years ago, they came to me and said, "Hey, could you consult with us on this?" And then a series of things happened, and it didn't quite come together. And 6 years later, about a year ago, the director of exhibits sent me an email attached to the last one from 6 years ago, saying, "Hey, we got approval," and so that's. That's how this happened, and we looked around and said, yeah, there's a lot to talk about now.
Sarah Gould, what do we have at the exhibit?
Oh, we have hundreds of artifacts, some of them quite old, some of them new. As Travis mentioned, the craft beer industry in Texas has just been growing by leaps and bounds, so we have things representative of that, but we also have things representative of our hundreds year plus history of beer in Texas. We have some items from one of the earliest commercial breweries in Texas. That's the Kreischer Brewery by LaGrange, which now actually a state park. It's owned by Texas Parks and Wildlife, and they have done multiple archaeological digs there, so we have some great stuff from there. And again, that's one of the earliest commercial breweries in Texas. Here in San Antonio, we had some very early breweries that we have artifacts from, the original Lone Star, the original what ends up becoming the San Antonio Brewery, it's now the San Antonio Museum of Art. We actually have
that's the old Lone Star Brewery.
Yes,
I don't think people remember that was the old Lone Star. For a long time, it was abandoned.
A long time ago, but just in 2008, there was an archaeological dig right behind the San Antonio Museum of Art, and embedded in the bank of the river there, they dug out a bunch of old bottles from the original brewery, and so one of the objects we have on view is a bottle from about 1880, and when they dug it out, it was about 4/5 full of a pale yellow liquid, and the bottle was sealed, and when they opened it up, it smelled strongly of yeast and vinegar. The bottle.
How did it taste, Travis?
They didn't invite me to taste it, yeah.
They've actually kept that liquid, and they're planning to test it in the future, but we have the bottle in view. The bottle is embossed with the name William Esser. He was one of the owners originally there. So, and then one other fantastic thing we were able to borrow from Shiner is Shiner's famous brewmaster and owner was Cosmos Spötzl, who ended up naming Shiner's actually was originally the Spötzl Brewery. We have his personal Oktoberfest Stein from Germany on view. So we have a number of great old things, but also some things that'll show you just how vibrant beer is today in Texas.
How is the beer scene right now, Scott Metzger of Freetail Brewing Company?
I think if you're a Texan who enjoys beer, there's never been a better time to be alive. We have more breweries and more quality beer than we've ever had. Both, you know, that's a very subjective opinion, but I think recently, as a few weeks ago, Texas Brewery scored the greatest number of Great American Beer Festival medals in the history of the state, bringing home 21. And, there's a bit of an objective qualification for, how great the scene has become. So, Travis mentioned it wasn't long ago that we only had 30-something breweries in the state, and today we have about 220. So it's come a long way in a short period of time.
In 2013, we changed some of the craft brewing laws at the legislature. We heard a lot of promises about what that change would bring to Texas, and what did we see?
I'm a recovering economist, right, who now makes beer for a living, and I put together an economic impact study when we were changing those laws, and the economic impact back then was around $600 million, and I predicted that if we changed the laws to be what we did, it'd be around $6 billion by 2020. Today,
Just seven years.
Well, we're 4 years later now, and the economic impact is $4.5 billion. So I feel a little validated that, everyone who has an economics degree from UTSA can feel validated that they actually taught us what we're doing, because my prediction. Came true. We opened up the market for breweries to have new avenues to grow, and it's absolutely boomed.
So we said the economic impact. So these are jobs created, new jobs are being created, or wealth is being added to the economy. What does that mean?
Sure. Yeah. Both the direct impacts of new jobs created and profitability from these breweries and what they're putting back into the communities, but also the impacts they're having on suppliers, retailers, distributors, all the way down.
And
the line.
Adding to the quality of life with fine brew being put to the mouths of many thirsty individuals in Texas. We're going to continue talking about beer in Texas, the history and the future. What questions do you have? What's your favorite beer issue? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Source comes back in 1 minute. Stay tuned.
30 cases of the National Beer of Texas. He's a fiend.
Could you describe the alleged perpetrator?
You mean the giant armadillo?
He does.
Well, you seen one 12-ton armadillo, you seen them all.
Uh-huh.
No, he never even touched the popcorn or the pretzels. Just the Lone Star.
Lone Star, the National Beer of Texas.
Anything else missing?
Nope, just my roof.
And that's a classic Lone Star TV ad giving birth to the myth of the giant armadillo that would raid beer halls and beer trucks And it became quite popular talking about the giant armadillo in Texas. We're talking about beer in Texas. The Institute of Texan Cultures is having an exhibit, opens on Friday, talking about the history and the connections of Texas beer and to our Texas culture. I want to bring in a caller. The number is 210-614-8980 if you got a question or a comment. And Bridget is on the line. Hey, Bridget, welcome to The Source.
Hi. I just wanted to say that Freetail is one of my favorite breweries in town. I mean, there's so many good ones, but I love everything that you put out, all of your different seasonal flavors, all the fun activities you do at your brewery and the things you do for the community, and the education that you provide for people with bets.
All right, Bridget.
Yes, keep brewing.
Okay, thanks for calling in. So Scott Metzger, that's you. You are the founder and CEO of Freetail Brewing Company. Any words of appreciation to Bridget?
Thank you so much, Bridget. I owe you a few beers now, I think, for that fantastic plug. But I think you hit on one thing that's really important for us, which is what we do in the community. I'm a born and raised San Antonian. Most of our, all of our partners in the company are born and raised San Antonians. Most of our employees are, and we take a great deal of pride at giving back to San Antonio. So, and we have a great project coming up that we're doing with the San Antonio Zoo, where a portion of the sales for every six pack will go to the San Antonio Zoo Foundation. So that's just one example of what we do to, you know, give back to the community. So I appreciate that. That you take notice.
Yeah, so talk about that doing a microbrewery or a craft brewer like you are is more than just putting out beer. You interact with the community. You work with local nonprofits. Alamo Beer is also one that we work with here at Texas Public Radio. So and you guys, so it's not just putting out beer. It's more than that.
I think it's a great illustration that, beer is a focal point for communities, and it's a place where people can come together. So it's a great vehicle, and we'd be remiss to not take advantage of it to do good for the communities. So from anything from, hurricane relief fundraisers, we raised $10,000 for hurricane relief in 4 hours at our brewery after Harvey hit. We're, really proud of, being able to do this for the zoo. Ultimately at the end of the day, I think that's what, small independent breweries are doing all across the country, being able to give back to the communities and being reflections of the communities that they operate in.
Here's another TV ad. This goes back to the 1950s.
Join the swing to Pearl. Swing your partner, swing to Pearl, the 3X brand in big demand. Extra dry, extra light, extra mellow, taste just right for extra pleasure every day. Join the folks who always say, bottle of Pearl, please. Why don't you join the swing to premium quality Pearl?
That's a former San Antonio TV personality, Thomas Reynolds. You might know him if you go back that far. So talk about Pearl Beer, Travis Poling, beer journalist. What was the brand? Whatever happened to Pearl Beer?
It is still around. It is owned by Pabst Brewing Company. It was brewed, all of it was brewed at the Pearl Brewery for many years.
Where everyone goes now for kale chips and stuff.
That's right, where it's called. And it's that whole area is now called The Pearl. And it's owned by a local company, Silver Ventures. But they don't own the beer. They just have the right to use the name Pearl in association with it. They also very generously donated a lot of artifacts for the exhibit. Loaned us some very rare things, some very cool things, some very kitschy things from the time. But they were a big business. They were one of the largest businesses in San Antonio.
The Pearl Brewery Company.
The Pearl Brewery. It was known as San Antonio Brewing Association, and they made Pearl. It wasn't until much later, after Prohibition was lifted, that they actually changed their name to the Pearl Brewery after their signature brand. Likewise with Lone Star. The original Lone Star Brewery shut down when Prohibition hit, and the new Lone Star that you saw in 1940 was a completely different company, unrelated. But there was no actual Lone Star beer as a beer brand, a specific beer, until 1940 under the new one. But these were large employers. They were kind of, the people who owned them were sort of beer barons. They led pretty colorful lives. And you think of railroad barons and all these other, but the beer barons were pretty big deal. But they were very much ingrained in the culture of the city. Even while there were still, before Prohibition, there were a lot of little breweries kind of scattered around. So in San Antonio, you might have 4, 5, 6, 7 little breweries at a time. But then you had these big modern plants starting in the starting in the 1880s that came on.
But so Scott, tell me, like, do you remember Pearl beer? How it used to taste, or I don't know, how does it still taste the way it used to taste, Travis?
It still tastes like it did when I first started drinking it. See, I'm 50 now, so that was 30 years ago. It still pretty much tastes the same.
And it is, describe it is, that. Can yes. Scott describe what a Pearl? What is since you were a beer crafter?
Sure. Well, I have fonder memories of Pearl Light. It was before a lot of craft breweries were putting beer into cans. That's what we took to the river and to the beach. We can get a 12-pack for $6, and it was only 68 calories, and it was about as close to water as you could get. So.
That was its claim to fame, was the water connection. So Sarah Gould, curator of Brewing Up Texas, I mean, they talked about the water a lot in Pearl.
Absolutely. In many of their ads, the A River is featured. It's not actually the San Antonio River in those commercials. It's like a rolling river that you see in the commercials. It's more dramatic. But the water was their claim to fame. And their tagline was something like,
The land of 1100 springs.
There you go.
And so they were making a big deal about aquifer water, mm-hmm. being the water, how pure and crisp and clean it was, and that was nowhere else in the world could you get this great water to make this great beer. And that was the secret behind it, Travis.
It was the limestone that creates our sort of hard water. It was very comparable to what they were used to brewing with in Germany. And so it could really make the crisp lagers that they were looking for at the time. And they were, there were stories about how Otto Kaler went to Germany and procured this famous recipe for Pearl. It's believed that he probably actually stole it from somebody, didn't get it from Germany. But certainly they were making these very clean, crisp lagers with this water. Back then, somewhere along the way, mostly in the 60s, 70s, and then on into the 80s, they used less and less pure ingredients. The water was still okay, but they were using more and more corn syrup, the taste changed completely.
Okay, so when they say they were taking Land of 1100 Springs water, where were they really getting the water from? And were they getting out of the tap, or were they getting out of the river? Did they have their own well? What were they doing?
They had their own well.
Okay, and where was that?
I don't know exactly where it's located. I've asked, and I've not gotten an answer, but I don't know exactly where the well was.
Okay. And so what kind of artifacts do you have for Pearl? I mean, is it like when you go to an old bar, maybe you go to some place out and, off the beaten path, and you go to and you see a lot of old Pearl tin ads on the roof and stuff?
We have a section of the exhibit that focuses on beer advertising and ephemera, which is how when you go into a bar and you see all of those things all plastered on the wall, or even people might be collectors and they have the, maybe not so much anymore, but ashtrays and matchbooks and things like that. So we have a whole section on that, and that will look a little bit bar-esque. But we also have things that came from the factory. So we have some things that you would not see anywhere else. We have a couple of pieces of uniforms from staff people there. We have a couple of manufacturing objects.
All right. So when we're going to go to break, our phone lines are open. You got memories of great brands here in Texas for beer. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got great stories, we want to hear your stories. 210-614-8980. We're going to put you on hold as we do the pledge drive, and we're going to go to the pledge drive right now. The pledge drive is now on tap. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
On days like this, at times like these, only the best is good enough. This is where Lone Star belongs. Lone Star, holder of the Gold Award from America's Brewers.
You deserve the very best. Nothing else, nothing less. Get
And that that ad is from the old Lone Star from 1968, and it's the visuals are great. I wish I could have shown them to you. It's a guy and a gal. They're bicycling through. It looks like something like maybe Brackenridge Park, and he pulls out 2 6-packs of beer, and they're going to go have a picnic with 2 6-packs of beer. And at the very end of the ad, a big full screen comes up talking about, visit us at Hemisphere 19, it's Hemisphere 68. And we're talking about beer in Texas, the history of beer, the cultural connections, how it's influenced our music and fashion and all sorts of things here. And you're invited to call in. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about beer in Texas. There's an exhibit opening on Friday at the Institute of Texan Cultures, which was part of Hemisphere 68 back in the day. Sarah Gould is the curator of Brewing Up Texas. And Sarah, why did you decide to do this exhibit?
You know, I know that people who are familiar with us maybe have memories of coming to ITC as a kid, and maybe they associate that with the standard growing up in San Antonio field trip. And so this was a slight departure for us in that it's an exhibit that primarily has appeal to adults. However, it really does fit into our overall mission of telling the stories of the diverse cultures of Texas, because beer is a story of immigrants. Beer is a story of German and Polish and Czech immigrants. It's a story of settlement patterns where you see these commercial breweries popping up. It's primarily in what we call the German Belt, which is where people from Bavaria and thereabouts settled in Texas. And it's also a story about culture, because as commercial brewing grows, as Scott mentioned and Travis alluded to too, breweries have always played a vital role in their communities. So it was very common for the local commercial brewer not just to employ locals, but also to sponsor community events, parades, radio shows, things like that. And then, of course, beer is part of our social culture. When you think about beer halls, beer gardens, ice houses, honky-tonks, these are social spaces that include beer. And so we certainly are going to be talking about drinking responsibly in the exhibit, but I do think it's undeniable that beer is part of Texas culture.
Let's go to Justice on the line. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to call in with your beer memories, if you didn't black out with your beer. Here's Justice. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call in because I'm a huge Lone Star fan. Ever since I was a kid, it just raised around it. And my dad even has a tattoo of the Lone Star Shield. And just love Texas beer. And I'm actually about to start working at a local artisan brewing company in New Braunfels. Just moved out there, Five Stones Brewing Company. So I love to just get plugged in and excited about the topic.
All right, Justice, thanks for calling in. Lone Star, brand loyal, and for many, many years, that was the brand here. It was brewed in San Antonio. They stopped brewing it here, but I'm seeing a lot more people at bars drinking a can of Lone Star. Travis?
Yeah, it's interesting. There was a study done by, I think it was either IRI or Nielsen, and they were looking at grocery store patterns, beer buying patterns. And one of the things that they saw is they would literally go and look in people's carts, and they would say, what do you have? And I've noticed this even just going to HEB, is you'll see people, and they'll have an $8.99 six-pack of something local, or you know, maybe something from one of the a brewery in California or Colorado. And then right next to it, they'll have a six-pack of Lone Star. You see this exact same trend in the bars, in sort of the craft beer bars that have popped up around San Antonio, and that people will go and they'll spend $10, $15, $20 on drinking, you know, really good beer, and then they get a little low on money and they switch to Lone Star Tall Boys, and it's ingrained in the culture. It's cheap, and it's a throwback to them. It was their, you know, their parents' beer, or it was the beer that they drank in, you know, in college. And so there's a lot of it's not just sensory of taste; it's sensory of memory, what people associate with beer,
and image and character, and yes. What you're trying to say. It's a statement. What kind of beer you're going to grab, and how do you describe the classic? This is the same Lone Star that I dared to drink when I was just a, you know, legal aged child. And now it's changed quite a bit in the past 30 some odd years.
It has. And this is true of Schlitz. It's true of Pabst. It's true of, you know, all those budget beers that you can think of. And at one time they were considered premium beers. What happened was you had big marketing dollars going to Miller and Budweiser brands. They really couldn't compete with that. And so they instead cheapened their ingredients. They used more corn syrup in it so that they could compete on being able to offer a product at a lower price that people would reach for. And that just, as more and more consolidation happened into, especially in the 1980s, you saw more and more of that. Now, there have been some attempts to sort of do some throwback on that. In fact, before Pabst Brewing Company closed all of its breweries, including the Pearl Brewery here in 2001, they had, through a series of acquisitions, they had actually gained access to Lone Star, and they had the rights to brew Lone Star. So they brought it back in-house, and they were going to brew and did some small batches of the original Lone Star recipe, or at least one that was from the 60s, if not from the 40s. And they did the same thing with Schlitz, and they still made the other product. But it did fairly well, but it disappeared pretty quickly, and especially after they didn't have any of their own breweries to do it in.
Okay, here's another caller. This is Tricia. And Tricia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, I wondered if either one of your guests had any information about the Black Elephant Saloon. It was down on Forest Street in the turn of the century. My mother is 92 years old, and she has in her family archive of photos pictures of her Uncle John standing in the doorway of the saloon. And apparently, as she tells it, a lot of the local politicians and lawmakers and businessmen would meet at the saloon to discuss business deal and politics. It was right by the Spanish governor's palace. Any info?
All right, Tricia. And so let's go to Sarah Gold. You're going to kick this to you since you're the curator of the Brewing Up Texas exhibit.
Hi, that sounds like a great photo. And unfortunately, off the top of my head, I know nothing. But I would be happy to look into it for you. Maybe I can get your number from the producer or something, and then maybe I can try to follow up with you.
And if you have a scan of that photograph, that would be a contribution to history of San Antonio, especially if the Black Elephant Saloon was a watering hole where the local politicians and powerful gathered in order to broker deals. It would be great to know more about that institution. Here's Jennifer, and it's Jennifer on the line. Hey, Jennifer, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, so my grandmother invested in Pearl Brewery stock, and that paid for my first 2 years of college. And then many years later, when I returned to school, Scott Metzger was my macroeconomics teacher. So, hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm great. I'm glad to hear that you're apparently doing well, and I didn't ruin you with my teaching. So.
And so, the stock paid for your college. Did you have like stock certificates, were they bottle cap? How did that work?
No. So she left me stock certificates, which I sold in 1976, and that paid for my first 2 years of college. And then when I returned to school many, many years later, I had to foot it with the student loans, but it sure did help in the beginning. So I've always been fond of Pearl. And just as an aside, my great-great-grandfather planted all the cypress trees along the San Antonio River. So we love that clear, lovely water.
All right, Jennifer, thanks for coming in. We've heard of the Beer College connection before, but this is a different connection for that. What is like the college crowd? What is their beer taste like these days? I guess, Scott, you'd be more into what the young appetite is.
I think it's much more diverse than probably people might expect.
To hear a lot about beer snobs.
A little bit, yeah. And I think it's not so much a snobbishness, but an appreciation and a connection to local suppliers. You know, this idea of supporting local and consuming local, you know, it was kind of maybe a left-wing, you know, hippie idea, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. Now is just how these kids have grown up. And it's second nature to them to support local. So when they're coming of age, it's a natural transition for them to seek out those local beers. So I know, like if you go to a UTSA football tailgate, you'll find our beer and other local beers all over the parking lot, and less and less of, macro-produced industrial beer, and I think that's an indication of where tastes are going.
And with the explosion of the breweries here in Texas, almost 1,000% increase over the last 12 years, I understand, a lot more freedom of choice.
Absolutely. Never been a better time to be a beer consumer in Texas.
Some people talk about the tyranny of choice. There's too many choices. Where do you start?
Well, there's also... I agree with that choosing can be difficult, but there's also an illusion of choice going on as well, where the macro brewers are starting to see these small brewers cut into them, and they are acquiring brands or creating brands to create the illusion of choice when you're really just buying Budweiser.
Aha. So we'll talk more about that and also some other shenanigans at the Texas legislature impacting craft brewers. And your questions and comments, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the history of beer in Texas. Some more history on tap when we come back from this break. Stay tuned.
Smelt postilly plough, slung sesame till all. They smelt postilly plough, slung sesame till all. Piva pilo dosti, aidla dosi dosti. Piva pilo dosti, aidla dosi dosti. They smelt postilly plough, slung sesame till all.
And that again is Adolf Hofner, and they are singing a song in Czech, and it's sometimes called the Shiner Song. So that's a tribute to, the heritage and the culture that brought great beer to Texas, and Adolf Hofner was a local favorite for many, many years. And so we're talking about the history of beer in Texas with us, Travis Poling, beer journalist and author of San Antonio Beer, Alamo City History by the Pint and Beer Across Texas. So Adolf Hofner, in the terms of the beer world, he was an original pitchman for Pearl Beer.
He was, and he knew, he really knew how to get people excited.
He loved to get people dancing.
Get people dancing.
And he was a Czech. Guy.
Yes, and you saw so many influences, even into the 50s, people, and even now, I know people in their 80s who still very much remember those times, and they may not be able to drink so much anymore, but they talk about Hofner, they talk about the Texas Top Hands, they talk about all these bands that were basically sponsored by beer companies, and that's how they sort of made their living and competed against Bob Wills.
Yeah, he was a direct competitor. But we don't want that history to fade away into the void and be forgotten. And so, Sarah Gold, why is it too important to bring that back up?
Excuse me.
Take a sip of beer, will you?
I think that the history of beer in Texas points to larger stories around who we are and that cultural mix that we all enjoy. That song that you just played, it might have been in Czech, but you know people who did not speak Czech were dancing to that song, right? So it speaks to who we are as Texans. I also think that if you think about the growth of the industry today, it's just great to see that connection between what's happening now and what our ancestors experienced. And when you come and you see the exhibit, you're going to learn about how beer goes back to 10,000 BCE, and possibly, you know, that's what the archaeological record tells us. So there could be more. We don't know. But this is something that is so old. It is something that is ingrained in our human history, not just our Texan history. So it's something, I got to tell you, before this project, before I met Travis, I really didn't know that much about beer other than, you know, you go to a bar and there are a lot of beer choices. So this has been a great experience for me, but just seeing that connection between the distant past and the present is really fun. And I think people are going to love it. And so if I could, I will just plug that this Friday from 6 to 8 p.m., we have a opening reception for the exhibit. It is free. We're going to have samples from Freetail, from Alamo, from Big Ben Brewing Company. We're going to have some German-inspired hors d'oeuvres. Everybody is invited.
Sounds like a party.
Yes.
So beer and Texas politics go hand in hand. Back to the days of Paul Ferguson, and we really didn't have political parties. We had wet versus dry in Texas politics, and now we still have some sort of shenanigans up in the Austin under the Pink Dome dealing with beer. In the last legislative session, they passed House Bill 3287, and some people have said that this is kind of hurts craft brewers in Texas. And so, Scott Metzger, can you talk about that?
Yeah, essentially what this bill did under the guise of protecting small brewers was because of some of the acquisitions that large breweries have made that I talked about before the break, the legislature felt, we needed to protect small brewers, and that's a worthy cause. But their plan they devised to do this was to create a law that if your brewery or any brewery you're associated with combines to be over a certain size, then any beer that goes from your warehouse to your tap room, which is typically in the same building, maybe only a couple feet away, must be quote-unquote sold and quote-unquote repurchased from a distributor, even though that no actual changing of hands or custody takes place. So it's basically a tax that brewers are paying to wholesalers for under the guise of protection.
So here, as I understand it, in 2013, we passed new laws that allowed beer craft brewers to sell their own beer in their tap rooms. Distributors said that bill created loopholes for large beer companies to buy up Texas craft brewers and take advantage of this law and be able to sell beer at a large amounts, volumes, and not pay the distributors. And so they say this new law that if you sell over 25,000 kegs of barrels of year of beer, then you have to somehow pay a distributor if I'm going to move a keg of beer from one part of my walk-in to out to where I can tap into it. And you're paying a distributor for beer that they never even laid a hand on. Is that right?
Right, and did no work in the value creation chain for that beer, and ironically, you stated the arguments for it, to protect from the large brewers, take right. advantage of these loopholes, but the large brewers were exempted from the law. So,
this is something that you're going to be keeping an eye on. We'll be keeping an eye on beer law, beer history happening here and at the. The Institute of Texan Cultures, they've got their Friday opening, and Travis Poling, you'll be there?
I will be there.
All right, thank you so much. We're going to go back to our pledge drive. Our pledge drive is on tap, and we expect you to sit down and draw a pint and enjoy that as well. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.